It's Thursday, June 30th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, Turkey deals with the aftermath of a deadly airport bombing. Financial markets seem to be shrugging off world problems.
More uncertainty is not good for anybody. It's not good for the financial markets. It's not good for their own economies and their own public.
The politics of Brexit is heated on both sides of the English Channel. Also ahead, new creatures appear at the zoo. It's all on today's International Edition. Turkey has blamed Islamic State jihadists for the deadly assault on Istanbul's Atatürk International Airport, denouncing the latest terrorist attack in the country and vowing to fight terrorism until the end. No one has claimed responsibility for the attack late Tuesday. The Turkish government declared a day of mourning Wednesday, even as work crews cleaned up the widespread debris at the airport and flights resumed. Joining us from Istanbul with the latest details is journalist Jyoti Er.
So what we know so far is that three suicide bombers walked into Istanbul's main airport, Atatürk International Airport, around 10:30 last night, armed with AK-47s. Shortly after that, the crowds were sprayed with a round of bullets, and one of the bombers did manage to make it into the airport. The other two did not manage to breach security and detonated themselves just slightly outside of security. Well, one of the bombers did make it in, and then he also detonated himself after being shot by security. We have 41 casualties and close to 230 injured, but it's still early to say. Many of the city's hospitals are dealing with the wounded, and at least 10 are in critical condition. So despite there being close to 24 hours between now and the attack, things are still in a flux, and no one has claimed responsibility for the attack. So it's a scary, scary time right now here in Istanbul.
Atatürk is Turkey's largest airport, a big international hub for travelers all around the world. I understand, though, that most of the victims were Turks.
Yes, that's true. Out of the 41 casualties so far, 13 were foreign nationals, but the remainder of the deaths were Turks. A lot of the people working on the ground inside the airport as well as outside the airport. This is the fourth bomb attack in Turkey just within this year, but this one has sort of really hit home for some reason.
The soft targets apparently are what these people are trying to hit. How have authorities responded? Turkey already has several layers of protection in many of these areas, like the airport.
Well, exactly. In airports, large corporate buildings, even in the shopping malls, there is an extra layer of security, similar to something you go through at the airport in North America. You check in and you go through the whole round of putting your luggage through screens, getting x-rayed, etc. And this sort of process happens when you visit the mall here in Turkey, and it happens before you can actually enter the airport here in Istanbul. Going back 3 to 4 years, you would not see the amount of police presence that you see today. I'd say just within the past 2 years, there has been a significant increase in police patrols on places such as on bridges. Armed police officers are patrolling there in city centers. For example, the main downtown area, Taksim, now police cruisers are a common sight. They're part of the downtown now, whereas 2 years ago, you wouldn't see the same thing. So the government, the state, has already taken a lot of measures ever since. I mean, a lot of it does have to do with the fact what's happening next door in Syria, but there's also the internal threat, the internal problem that Turkey has had with the Kurdish population for the past several decades. So they've already been forced to take these extra measures.
Unlike other attacks that we have seen in Paris and Brussels, the airport was up and running pretty quickly after this.
Yes, surprisingly, but I just to clarify for your listeners, in a lot of the reports we're hearing that the attackers made it past security, but because the Istanbul airport has that extra layer of security, I think it could have been a lot worse if those security measures weren't in place. And perhaps that's the reason the airport was up and running. And secondly, also, I'm sure we know that the attack took place in the international terminal. There is a link there, obviously, with tourism and sort of causing fear, and this would hurt Turkey's economy in terms of tourism. Tourism is huge here. So I think officials also felt that extra pressure to clean up and get back to business as quickly as possible. This is the last thing that they need during this season when tourism is supposed to spike. And I can tell you from being out and about this morning that it's pretty dismal out there.
Freelance journalist Jody Eyer in Istanbul, thank you for joining us and sharing the latest information.
Thank you for having me.
Moving on to our next segment, International Edition's social media reporter G. Abby Lee joins me right here in the studio with what's trending online. Hi, G.
Hi, Jim. One of the most popular sources on election in America has come out with a new prediction, and that's what's buzzing on social media Wednesday. Nate Silver came on ABC's Good Morning America program and said Clinton has a 79% chance of winning the general election. He predicted her rival, Donald Trump, has a 20% chance.
That's quite a significant difference. Mm-hmm. What's the online community's reaction to that prediction?
Now for that, let's check out what people are commenting on ABC's Facebook post about his latest prediction. A man named Alex wrote, Nate Silver also said that Donald Trump had less than 5% chance of winning the GOP nomination. Nearly 300 people liked that comment. But another person replied to that comment, leaving a link to Silver's article about that particular prediction and how he got it wrong.
Hmm. Well, maybe that's why Trump's out of the casino business.
Maybe.
He's quite famous, Nate Silver is, among those who follow politics in America. But tell us about him for our listeners abroad.
Sure. Silver is a statistician and the editor-in-chief of a website called 538. And the website focuses on opinion poll analysis, politics, economics, sports blogging, so basically any subject that can be predicted through statistics. The website has been quite successful, and there is a podcast and Twitter account under the same name. Now, fun fact, the website is called 538 because that's the number of electors in the U.S. Electoral College.
I like that. So what's the Twitter handle?
It's surprise, surprise, at 538, and Silver is also on Twitter at NateSilver538, but that number is in Arabic numbers. He actually shared a link to the website's link on the 2016 projection and tweeted, "Hey all, 2016 forecast is here." That's all for me today, Jim.
Well, thank you for the great wrap-up, G. You may tweet your questions and comments to our Twitter stream. It's found at VOA_IE. While you're there, tag G and myself on those tweets. Our handles at VOA Stevenson and at G Abby Lee. Among the top stories that are trending in Asia at this hour, Pakistan vows not to push out Afghan refugees. Toyota recalls more than 3 million vehicles. Bhutan's aspirational new generation searches for jobs. Kim Jong-un expectedly to solidify control of North Korea with a new title. China seeks an on-off switch for the internet. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com. That's our website. The switch is always on there. And on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. U.S. financial markets had a second straight rally following last week's Brexit shock that sent virtually all sectors down. VOA New York economics correspondent Jill Malandrino joins us with more on the market's impressive rebound.
It's been really interesting to watch, and this is one thing that we discussed last Friday when we were talking about the initial reaction. And for retail investors, we always recommend that you kind of let the noise play out and let the markets rebalance and find their footing again. We saw it happen with the financial crisis in 2008, 2009, and sort of these periodical times of volatility that we get in the markets. I do find it interesting, even though we've bounced over the past 2 days, now we're only just about 3% away from all-time highs in the S&P. Going into the Brexit vote, we were just about 2% away. So we're essentially back to flat on the year. What's interesting is the bond market is up as well. And we typically see an inverse reaction when stocks are up, bonds are down, and vice versa. So I'm wondering if there's some sort of tell there that there could be a little bit of volatility going into earnings, which kicks off next week. My expectations are we'll see flattish, very quiet trade over the next couple of days. On Thursday, it's the end of the quarter. And what we have in the U.S. with mutual funds, we call that window dressing, where portfolio managers pick up shares of stock to show that they have it on the books for the end of the quarter. Friday, it should be relatively quiet. A lot of traders here, we're going to be off for the three-day weekend in observance of the July 4th holiday on Monday. So I think that we're going to see more action when we come back to the desks on Tuesday, July 5th, and the earnings season picks up, which is going to be a very welcome distraction when we can talk about company-specific news versus having to try and guesstimate what global central banks, what the UK, the EU is going to do around more large macro issues.
Well, the timing of the holiday is actually pretty good because it almost puts a natural set of brakes on the market for a little bit and helps it to kind of cool down.
Right. Even when we got the initial reaction, I was thinking that it was good that it happened on a Friday so that you kind of have the weekend to let it play out. We saw that action where it wasn't quite as bad on Monday, and then the markets came back on Tuesday and Wednesday as cooler heads prevail, which is typical. So I do think to have that three-day weekend will be good. The thing is right now, nobody knows what's going to happen next, politically, socially, economically. So hopefully this rest will be good for the global markets to kind of take a step back, because even though it's just the U.S. that's closed, we are, you know, one of the largest moving factors in the global markets, and I think it'll be good to take that break.
I've heard some stories that foreign investors are again looking at U.S. real estate. Could that explain some of what is happening in the financial markets?
It could be some of what's happening, but it's even more interesting. You're getting Chinese interest in UK real estate because the pound is so much lower now. There was a study on how Google searches indicated that that was one of the larger searches that was coming out. You know, right now, it's a good time to travel over there because your dollar or whatever currency you have is going to be worth more as the pound has been beaten up a bit. So I think UK real estate could get a bounce there. And I think the U.S. markets overall are going to be perceived as a safe haven asset because there is so much instability and unknown in a large part of the globe.
Well, suddenly, the U.K.'s okay. Always okay. It's Jill Malandrino, our economics correspondent from New York. Jill, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
The political wranglings of Brexit are being played out at EU headquarters in Brussels. Britain wants to take its time while the EU wants a quick divorce. VOA's Lisa Bryant in Paris shares details with International Edition host Ira Melman.
I think the feeling among EU leaders is that, you know, more uncertainty is not good for anybody. It's not good for the financial markets. It's not good for their own economies and their own public. You know, the EU is not a particularly an issue that many people like. It's not popular among many Europeans. So I think that they want to have certainty and to move forward and also to figure out what to do next in terms of carving out a future without Britain. And all of this can't be done until Britain actually triggers the so-called Article 50 that unleashes sort of the process to exit.
You're in Paris. What is the overall feeling about the situation there and also from what you hear from Brussels and around the rest of Europe?
Well, there are sort of different points of view. On the one hand, yes, there's been plenty of speculation in the press and in some remarks that there could be a revote, that there are options for the British Parliament, to basically say no, that there's this potential fallout in terms of Scotland. And in fact, the Scottish leader will be meeting with European Union officials later today. On the one hand, you get a fairly strong response by a number of EU leaders, Jean-Claude Juncker being one of them. He's the president of the European Commission, and he says, out is out. You made the decision, Britain. Now you have to stick by it. When you talk to people on the streets of Paris, which I have done, there's kind of a mixed feeling. Some people are thinking, well, maybe we should have a French Brexit vote, that is, a Frexit vote. Others are saying, listen, this is a real shame, you know, that this kind of hurts the European project, whatever that may be. So there is kind of a real mix of different feelings, from anger to that's the way it is, let's move forward. That would be Angela Merkel, Germany's chancellor, and also a sense of, well, perhaps we should think about the same thing.
So what are the priorities of the EU meetings going on now?
A lot of people are saying we need to have a whole overhaul of what the EU is about to move forward. So a real fundamental relook about what this bloc is about, what its goals are, and how it's going to respond to European publics.
Is there fear in the aftermath of the Brexit vote?
Yeah, there is fear. Some people fear that that the Brexit vote could spark other votes in the same direction, a Grexit vote in Greece, a Frexit vote in France, where there are elections next year, and the National Front, the far right, is talking about a similar sort of referendum. The fear that it could trigger many other sort of domino effect. On the other hand, experts are also saying, hey, you know, look at the disarray that's going on already in Britain in every way, financially, politically, et cetera. And actually, you may get the opposite direction, where people are going to want more certainty and stability. And in some ways, that has been echoed in Spain, where they had elections on Sunday. And instead of going for more populist parties, even though there's no firm fallout so far in that vote, that many people still backed the conservative Parti Populaire, the PP in Spain, showing that there is a certain search for stability, at least in some areas.
VOA's Lisa Bryant in Paris. You can visit voanews.com for more on this story, and follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE. And you can like us on Facebook as well. We're at VOA Now. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This is VOA's International Edition. The National Zoo here in Washington is home to about 1,800 animals, representing 300 different species. But throughout the summer, visitors will also see different yet captivating kinds of creatures there. They are larger-than-life animal sculptures that speak volumes about a global issue: the massive plastic pollution in our oceans. VOA's June So takes us to the zoo's special exhibit called Washed Ashore: Art to Save the Sea.
A giant parrotfish greets visitors at the main entrance to the National Zoo. A bit farther on are a tufted puffin seabird, a freedom starfish, and more, all bright, beautiful, and eye-catching sculptures. But take a closer look, and you'll begin to notice they're assembled with plastic toys, a hair comb, bottle caps, beer cans, and many other everyday objects.
I observe visitors coming in thinking that these sculptures are made out of recycled plastic, but in fact they're marine debris, and when they find that out, they're shocked.
The sculptures were created by Angela Hazeltine Plotzi with the help of thousands of volunteers to deliver a serious message. The artist is executive director of Wash to Shore, a nonprofit environmental group.
This is all plastic picked up off of beaches, every single bit of it. So we have processed about 18 tons of garbage off of a small area of beach in the last 6 years. And it could be anywhere in the world. This is a worldwide problem, the plastic pollution issue.
So far, Plotzi has created 68 such sculptures, and 17 of them are displayed throughout the National Zoo. This whalebone ribcage is made entirely with bleach bottles. The blue marlin has flip-flops inside its mouth, and hundreds of water bottles create these jellyfish.
I've purposely chosen to represent the animals that are threatened by marine debris. The fact that plastic breaks down into microscopic pieces and getting into the entire food chain means everything that lives in the ocean is affected by it.
A recent study estimates about 8 million tons of plastic waste enters the oceans each year and poses a threat to a wide variety of marine animals.
Single-use plastics are probably the worst you could get. They're used for 5 seconds and then last forever. We don't even think about it.
The message of these powerful artworks seems to be making an impact on visitors of all ages.
First, we need to make sure that no trash gets washed up. So instead of leaving it onto the beach, you need to pick it up and you need to put it in the trash before it gets washed up, gets fed to fish, and like, or you can recycle it.
We have to be more careful. We have to be more attentive about what we do with the containers and things that we use.
Plotzi hopes her traveling exhibit will reach as many people as possible across the United States and overseas as well. For producer June So, I'm Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
We thank you so much for taking part of your day to join us and listen to International Edition. You can always find us at our website, voanews.com, like us on Facebook at VOA Now, and of course, follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Carl Starling. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Have a super day. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States extends its sympathy to the people of Pakistan as they mourn the senseless murder of famed Sufi Qawwali singer Amjad Sabri. Mr. Sabri, who came from a distinguished family of singers of Sufi devotional music, was gunned down in his car in the southern city of Karachi on June 22nd by unidentified assailants on motorbikes. Karachi police described the attack as an act of terror. A faction of the Pakistani Taliban has claimed responsibility for the murder. The traditions of Sufi Muslims date back approximately 1,000 years in South Asia. But in recent times, they have drawn the anger of hardline Islamist groups like the Taliban. The State Department's most recent report on international religious freedom cites numerous reports of attacks on holy places, cemeteries, and symbols of religious minorities in Pakistan, and mentions the February 2014 attack on the shrine of Mast Qawqali, a popular Sufi poet of Baluchistan. The report also notes that throughout the year, members of religious minorities were targeted and killed by violent extremists. Thousands of Pakistanis attended Mr. Sabri's funeral. Pakistani Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif called Mr. Sabri's death an irreparable loss. At a press briefing, State Department spokesperson John Kirby said such acts as the murder of Amjad Sabri violate the fundamental freedoms of expression and religion and belief. The arts, Mr. Kirby added, have long been a forum for new ideas for fighting against intolerance. Our thoughts and prayers go out to Mr. Sabri's family and to the people of Pakistan.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.